I am taping, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, all good, all good. All right, everybody, so we wanted to welcome to Judy.
Thank you.
And I wanted to, I had.
And to Leslie, don't forget.
Leslie, welcome to Leslie. Glad you're here, glad you're both here. Dale is away.
They don't go to school on Chol HaMoed.
Columbus Day.
People are very from, they don't go to school on Chol HaMoed.
I'll remember that.
Yeah, right.
So what's an eyesore?
Remember, this is when we started.
Yes, that's right. Oh, that's right. Oh, this is our anniversary.
This is the anniversary of the Women's Jewish Learning Center.
There you go.
Started in our sukkah. Just saying.
The shul started in their living room, the Women's Jewish Learning Center started in their sukkah.
I didn't know that.
It was the humble brag. Yeah, that's where it started.
No, I like the humble brag. I've never heard of one of those before, and I like it a lot.
That will be the first chapter of my book. Okay, sorry.
The way Rabbi Jack Reamer likes to put it is, he said, "I'm known for my modesty." okay, so what's an eyesore? Gail, come on in.
Permanent makeup.
It's a what?
Permanent makeup.
Comes from permanent makeup.
Hi, how are you?
It's something you don't want to look at.
Right. It's something that disfigures the landscape. You know, it's something that you don't want to see, which is so. She's playing with us at the beginning, right? Okay. Because we're starting with a building, right? She's sort of leading us down the lane of thinking, eyesore, this is going to be, oh, the Candy Works, it's a rundown set of buildings near the unused railroad tracks. So we're thinking that that's the eyesore. Okay. Chocolate nuggets coated with lilac were still made partly by hand. That fossil factory. Does everybody have? Okay. Page 31. That fossil factory, Franny got to know it when she was still working for the Godolphin Weekly Times. Everything, the tracks, the shacks, the unburnished machines, the women in pink dresses stained with brown, was exactly as it must have been 70 years earlier, except that the current employees spoke Cambodian. Even 2 years after writing her article, Franny could still smell the overpungency. A child's idea of a perfect birthday cake. Sugar and chocolate, only who needs flour? Sounds like a Pesach cake, right? You know? So what do we know about Franny? We get introduced to her, you know, just...
She's a writer.
She's a writer. She's a journalist. Mm-hmm. She goes to the Godolphin Weekly Times. She writes for them.
And not very attractive, at least in the
right. We're gonna see physically. In a second what she looks like. The first thing we learn about Franny is right before we learn about the fact that she's a journalist is Franny got to know it. Mm-hmm. Franny got to know it. That's the first thing we learn about Franny. She's a person, you know, this tells us about who she is as a journalist too, right? She gets to know things. And we're going to find out, you know, what is it about her personality that allows her to get to know things, but Franny got to know it. And she could still smell the overpungency. So she's not just somebody who, you know, goes and interviews and so on. She smells the place. Right? She takes in everything, you know, the visuals, the audios, the people, the smell.
A true investigative reporter.
Right, right, mm-hmm. right. So she's somebody who's aware of a lot of things and takes in a lot of things. The Candy Works. The Candy Works. What are we being told about the Candy Works? So what's the structure of this story? There's a frame. The frame is we begin with the Candy Works, and then from the Candy Works we have a flashback. We understand that it's a flashback to the Candy Works. It's 2 years later, and she's going to tell us, in those days I was invisible. She was invisible those days. And then the Candy Works are going to come back toward the end, not at the end, but toward the end, And we're going to understand the role of the Candy Works in the story. But does anybody want to take a stab at it yet? Well, okay, we can wait on it. Okay. Does the candy work or does the candy not work? That is one of the questions. The big theme of the story is what does it mean to be seen? What does it mean to be invisible? What does it take for somebody to really see you and not just, you know, see you on the outside? So, and what's real and what's an illusion, right? So all of those things she's going to unveil to us. She was nearly invisible in those days. Wait, I'm going to go with my Xerox copy where I put what we're reading and what we're not reading out loud. Okay. So the over-pungency, the child's idea, she's talking, she notices something that's too sweet, right? Too sweet. And that's the thing with candy, right? What is candy?
Sugar,
right? It's sweet. It's sugar. What does it give you when you eat it, and what does it not give you when you eat it?
No nourishment.
Mm-hmm. No nourishment whatsoever, right?
But it also gives you a sugar high.
Yes, a sugar high, right?
And pleasure.
Right. Right, right, pleasure, right. So, it's fun in the mouth for the short term, but for the body, you know, other than the sugar high, doesn't do anything for you. And so, and that's another theme of the story, right? Substance and, you know, sweet versus substantial. So she notices how sweet this is. So she has a kind of perspective on things. So let's keep going. Okay, she was nearly invisible those days. Nobody noticed her. The oblong face with bumpy features was about as memorable as a paper bag. The glasses made the face even more indeterminate. She owned half a dozen corduroy pants, brown like her hair and eyes, and six sweaters likewise, and a few pairs of sneakers. Okay, so Franny?
Boring,
you know, somebody who does not attend to her physical appearance, really. She has the same pairs of pants and she has the same colors.
Low self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Low self-esteem. Does she have low self-esteem?
Well, if you think whose voice is saying she's invisible, nobody noticed her bumpy features. I mean, who's making that judgment? It seemed to me that that's how she saw herself, and she further made herself more invisible by wearing all brown and being a mouse.
Right. But she doesn't say, I was invisible. She said, nobody noticed her. Right.
But didn't it benefit her in when she, because she could get to people who would talk to her.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As much as boring as she was, it really was a benefit. It seemed to me as a benefit to her.
Right.
So more than when she became more aware of herself.
Right. So on the outside, she was not noticeable. She said she's about as memorable as a paper bag. But what we already know about her, and what, of course, we're going to see later, is the face may be indeterminate, but the eyes see and the ears hear and, you know, and people trust her.
She's approachable.
She's approachable, and people will talk to her. They will tell her. Harry was just telling us about her mother who, you know, wherever she sat down, somebody would tell her their life story. You know, there are people like that who their presence encourages you to speak, and so she was one of those people. Franny began to step out of the shadows on a morning during her 27th year when an article in a science journal caught her attention. So now we know she's a reader, too. The article said that an exceptionally thin new contact lens has been developed, a lens that could be worn by easily irritated eyes, right? Eyes that get sore easily. Franny looked up at her shelf of detective novels and Balzac and wondered, not for the first time, what it would be like to gaze at something or even someone without the intervention of spectacles. She looked down again and read the names of the research team, saw to her unsurprised that they were associated with the Boston Teaching Hospital. She found through the telephone book that one of them maintained a private practice. She made an appointment. Okay. So what else have we learned about her?
She investigates.
She not only does she investigate herself, she reads about investigators, and you know, and also, but her reading goes from, you know, Balzac to, you know, Sherlock Holmes. We're talking about somebody who's a real reader.
She follows through. You know, she made the phone call and she made the appointment.
Yes, she's right. She takes action. Right. But what is it that's leading her to make that telephone call?
Going not to wear glasses.
Yeah, she's saying, you know, what would it be like to not have anything between me and the world, right? You know, what would that be like? You know, would I be able to see better, see in the large sense of what seeing is, without these things? So she's, you know, this is part of her curiosity, which is a real virtue.
Alana, yeah. I really related to that because I got contact lenses when I was 19. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking specifically that seeing, not being aware of being circumscribed by those made a tremendous difference. Mm-hmm. Not as deeply as you're analyzing it, but just in general, how you see the world is so different mm-hmm. at that transition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I said, I remember that.
You know, it's making me think that Edith Perlman, do we have a picture of her? No, she does not wear glasses, mm-hmm. and she's 70. So maybe she's a contact person.
She had cataracts.
Oh, she had cataracts? Okay. Right, right.
But it goes back to the beginning of the story where they talk about pungency.
Yeah.
So it's like, it made me think of The Sorcerer's Apprentice, where, you know, you have one clone to sweep the floor in the great Disney cartoon,
right.
where there's thousands of, and they can't control. Yeah. And that's what happens in the story. So this one event, to see better, causes her not to see.
Right.
I never realized that before.
So cool. Yeah. The lenses felt good. No itching yet, she wrote to her mother in November. When she went home for the Christmas weekend, she bared her unmediated eyes to her family. And it makes so much sense, right? Because that's what she is interested. That's what she's doing. She's a reporter. She's interested. She wants to know. Unmediated eyes. Her mother said she looked nice. Her brother's wife mentioned something about makeup when the two of them were putting away the dishes. And she remembers everything that she hears, right? Because she's going to pick up the thing on the makeup. Franny's great aunt gave her two velvet blazers for Christmas, one plum and the other cranberry. She put on one of them over the brown dress she was wearing and instantly acquired the higgledy-piggledy look of a bag lady. But back again in her Godolphin apartment, Franny tied on the blazers again over nothing. This time, her flesh reflected the silken glow of the jacket's linings. Her breasts glistened like a sultan's mistress. Her newly exposed eyes above all this brilliance seemed vulnerable. So what happened to Franny here? So she has the lenses, and she thinks that they're helping her see differently, right? Or, you know, she looks at her body and suddenly she's a sultan's mistress, right? She's trying on the blazers over nothing. But then the eyes seem vulnerable, so Franny remembered her sister-in-law's remark. She visited a cosmetic expert, a few strokes of the expert's pencil producing glittering orbs and sensuous eyebrows. Franny learned to use the pencil. Again, the woman of, you know, very practical. And now things happen fast. Harry, do you want to read the paragraph?
The world of low-fat diets and high-impact workouts were waiting to claim her. Back Bay department stores teamed garments in a tempting way. A skirt, a sweater, a cape artfully flung. Who could be blamed for wanting the whole caboodle? A new wardrobe took shape within Franny's closet, pants and jackets and shirts in various deep reds. There's an army of fashion consultants taking over the world, she told her boss one morning.
Okay, so things happened fast. The world of low-fat diets and high-impact was waiting to claim her. Waiting to claim her. Okay, there you understand that, the perspective is gone, right? It's claiming me? No, I have to go to that workout, right? You know, was there to claim her, like, meaning, like, she allowed herself to get, you know, pulled in. But there was, she had to do something in order for that. It wasn't, the diets and the workouts that made her do it, as it were. You know, it's as if she's passive in this process. Various deep reds.
With the cranberry and the,
the cranberry and the plum. Right, right. And we're going to talk to her boss is just about to ask her about what color it is. Jenny, do you want to read that paragraph? He looked at her appraisingly.
He was in his early 60s. He had been publishing and editing the paper for 3 decades. On behalf of the Godolphin Times, he valued Franny's almost presence. He knew that people felt safe with her, that they told her things. Her feature articles took weeks to brew, but they paid off in circulation. She did straightforward journalism as well. She had covered vendettas in the Massachusetts legislature and scandals in Harvard laboratories. He could send her to local fires and accidents. Now he supposed he could send her to fashion shows. What color do you call that blouse? Claret, I think. Maybe port. Are you being distilled?
Okay, right. So we go from cranberry and plum to claret and port. You know, it's, we're talking about the same clothes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but okay, so now it's claret and port. We're coming up in the world. Are you being distilled?
Yes.
Yes, yes. He looked at her appraisingly. The person that she's been learning from all of these years, or these couple of years, is somebody who can also see, you know, and also knows the right questions to ask, right? Are you being distilled? Just skip down a little bit. Yes, well, not too soon, I hope, she said. She has outfits and earth tones to be buried in. I have an assignment for you, the new soup kitchen, Donna's Bowl, Donna's Ladle. Ladle, it's attracting an element, shopkeepers say, homeless who take the streetcar in from Boston and have a meal at the bowl, ladle, I mean, and then beg our citizens for money, even badger them. Stemming, it's called. If you say so, will you check it out? She nodded, becoming again the old Franny, self-forgetful, ready to search for a story beneath ragged details. Plain? Maybe. But he didn't mind. He was rather a colorless man himself. What's the element? With a capital E.
The homeless.
Homeless people, right, who we suspect actually don't need what's being given to them, you know. Because they get the meal and they then ask people for things. Stemming, did anybody hear that word?
No.
And when you look it up in a regular dictionary, it won't be there. You have to look it up in a slang dictionary, right? Where it means to panhandle. Yeah. Old Franny, yeah. Self-forgetful. Yeah. Self-forgetful. She's a person who can see beyond herself. She can forget herself for a moment, right?
She was.
And that's what a writer has to do too. You know, like all great writers, she's Edith Perlman is telling us a story, and she's also writing about her art at the same time. You can't really see the world unless you can get out of yourself. Franny could do that. Franny was just beginning the article on stemming, had spent several afternoons aslant in doorways, great word, watching the panhandlers when a bigger story broke. There was a murder in Godolphin, the first of the century. Gail, do you want to read the top right right column?
Top right?
Yeah, Franny and
Franny
her boss.
Franny and her boss stood shoulder to shoulder on top of the car. Lieutenant Suarez says she was robbed, he told her, and then hit with a blunt instrument, or vice versa. Do you want the story? Then she said, there's a mortified family somewhere.
Okay, so just one second. Mm-hmm. So, again, she sees not just that there's a dead body, but she sees the larger picture, which is there's a family. Where was I reading this? It's just a book. Oh, Michael Chabon. No, this is not that. I can't remember which book it was, but it's somebody who understands that when somebody takes drugs or when somebody sells drugs, you're not just selling. It's not a deal between two people. There are two. There's a family out there of the person who's taking the drug. You know, it's always a larger picture. Gail, keep going.
He squatted as if he had a cramp and jumped, none too gracefully, into the street. He didn't offer to help her down. He was gallant by nature, but he knew his limitations. Franny found out that the murdered bag lady had been the bedeviled daughter of a respectable family. The shamed relatives wanted to hide, to gag themselves, to burrow into the ground, to talk. They talked to Franny, wearing the earth-tone garments. Franny sat in the New Hampshire home of the victim's sister, noting photographs, houseplants, needlepoint, trophies of a tended life. An ancient motherly mutely quivered in a plush chair.
I can't get over that phrase, trophies of a tended life. Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. An ancient mother mutely quivered in a plush chair. You know, so there's the wealth, there's the motherhood, but she's mute, you know, they can't, you know, they're going back, they're ashamed, but they want to talk. And mm-hmm. Franny, in her earth tones, she's not mm-hmm. in her reds, right? She's in the able to forget myself for a moment mode. if you want to skip the next paragraph, Barry, Franny supposed she did understand?
Franny supposed she did understand. Mostly she saw. She saw a child confused by patterns to begin with, becoming terrified by embroidered flowers that seemed to move, and a rug whose coil was striped. And those normal souls who happened to be the crazy girl's family, Franny saw them rigidly watching her hinges loosen and her lid pop off. How could she scream like that?
Mm-hmm. So back to that theme of seeing, right? Mm-hmm. She understood, but she saw. Which means, and she, how is she using this metaphor of seeing? Because we can say, I see, and we mean, I understand. But here, it's saying, mostly she saw. Well, what's the difference between that and understanding?
She's imagining.
She's imagining, yeah. She's using her imagination in order to empathize. You know, she creates this little story that could have happened or could have not, you know, but somebody who's mentally ill, and she sees what the family has gone through. You know, so it's seeing in a deeper way. Is it warm in here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm very comfortable. Well, look at you.
Right.
She's
always answering
something. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Go ahead. Keep
nice. So, right. What else does she see in that paragraph? She sees both sides, right? She sees the child who's confused. She sees the family who's not understanding, mm-hmm. and they're watching. You know. In their heart. Okay, so she can see both sides. Let's go to the next page, 36. She has, maybe you can help me with this. Whatever the editor of the month expected, what she got was gills. What is the gills there? Is that the name of the article?
No, gills is the man that she followed, the Russian. It took me a while to figure that out, but I'm pretty sure because in the next paragraph it says Gills was published in the fall, and it's right after she's talking about following that Russian immigré, and I think that's the name of the article.
That's what
named
I thought.
Yeah.
Oh,
the name of the article.
Okay.
I didn't know that it was the Russian.
So
well, that's what I think. But
Fanny wrote about a tuxedoed waiter, huge as a Nubian king, hurtling home on the midnight subway, and a French-speaking fish broker waiting at dawn on the glistening wharf, and a three-shift Pakistani family, some of them sleeping, some eating, some minding the store. We'll run it, but the title? her title was The Adaptations of the Hopeful. So I was thinking that that was her first, you know, her first title, but somehow it turned into Gill's. Okay. She wore her new clothing and makeup whenever she went out during the day, but at home and in the evening, she still reverted to the dull old clothes and the naked face. So what do we got here?
Inside and outside person.
Yeah, we got the transition, right? You know, there were still remnants of the old Franny when she went home, you know. What did they used to say? A Jew at home and a person, a citizen in the streets or something. So she still had those two parts of her, but not what she was showing to the world. The naked face. The right column, 37, and the second paragraph. Gill's was published in the fall. Lynn, do you want to?
Gill's was published in the fall. A week later, Franny received a telephone call from the producer of the local PBS news show.
It's not a soft C. Quidnunc. Yeah.
Okay. Wanted to interview her about other corners she'd found while creeping about the city as if on all fours. About what else had she seen with those eyes at the back of her head?
So what's quidnunc?
A busybody. It's
gossip.
Yeah. Okay. An inquisitive person, but a gossip.
Gossip.
Gossipy, yeah. Inquisitive person. So, the first red flag, or of many red flags that we've already seen, but another red flag. What else she had seen with those eyes at the back of their head. But even the red flag places understand that she has a talent, and, you know, so they want part of it. Do you want to keep going, Ramsey McGraw?
Ramsey McGraw, the dominant anchor of Quidnunc, was a rumpled slope of a man, his skin pitted, his irises the color of hemp. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about, he said. Then he told her what you want to talk about.
Okay, so, right. So here we have, he's the anchor. So what is television? So it's one thing that I say, and it's a different thing that we do, right? It's, you know, he told her what to want to talk about, right? You can talk about anything, but this is what you'll talk about, right?
It's the show.
Yeah, right, it's the show. I love the fans, actually, he says at the end of that paragraph. Why? They love me. Because there's me, and then there's the world, right? Okay, next page. The cameras. Ina, do you want to read today, or you should keep going? 38. The cameras at the very top.
Oh, the cameras trained their lenses on the desks. Beyond the cleansed battleground in the shadows, Brandy saw backstage debris, ropes, cables, hooks, boxes, a flung book, some bottles, stacked folding chairs. Wow, drawled the director after the interview. What an exotic pairing. Alert observer plays off deep thinker. We'll have to do this again. Call you? That meant goodbye, Franny figured, but no, she was invited to be a guest again, and then again. Are you getting paid for this? Asked her boss. No, should I be? I don't know.
Okay. So, alert observer plays off deep thinker. Okay, right. This Ramsey McGraw, speaking of, he'll tell you what he is so that you know he's the deep thinker.
Well, it's just like the candy factory.
Right, right.
It's the same setup.
Yeah, it's all the superficials.
Factory, yeah.
Right, which is.
Front, you know, and debris in the back.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And what do we call, you know, people will call, you know, those very wonderful looking anchors and so on. What do we call them?
Eye candy.
Eye candy, right? So eye candy. Franny got the offer the next day, middle of 38. Leslie, do you want to?
Okay.
All of a sudden, Ramsey's co-anchor gave notice. She's decided to stay home with her three daughters, Ramsey groaned to Franny. I can no longer keep abreast of theories of child development. Won't those kids grow up deprived without daycare? He fixed her with his manila eye. Do you have children? Franny got the offer the next day in the newsroom. It was not tactful of Ramsey to call her there, but it was politic. She could look around at what she was being invited to leave. The desks jammed together, the anemones drooping in clouded water, the boss behind the glass partition, the obese secretary who knew everything, the staff tippler. I'll have to think it over, she lied. More?
Yeah, just one more.
3 days later, in the middle of the afternoon, she and her boss walked up Godolphin Hill. They reached the top and settled themselves on the same bench the Russian had occupied. Summits, said Franny. I distrust them. Pseudo-clarifying, she agreed.
Okay. So, why is it not tactful but politic?
Well, it would be more tactful if you called her at home or sent a
private
email or
yes.
Be more, because then she's not constrained in any way.
Right. And what does politic mean here?
It's manipulating her.
Yes. Yeah. The better to manipulate her, right? Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, he didn't really care whether it's tactful or not, you know, that he's poaching somebody else's employee. Doesn't matter. What's important is to convince her to take the job. Well, best way to do that, see what she can leave. Right. Summits, said Franny. I distrust them. Pseudo-clarifying. What are we talking about here?
They're meeting on the top of the hill.
Right. So they're on the top of the hill. But, you know, in other words, when you're on the top of the heap, right, you can see in certain ways, but the boss knows to distrust them,
yeah.
Right. And pseudo-clarifying, she agreed, because you can see certain things, but you know, it's only partial vision, just like vision down below is only partial vision. They talked of her new job, an opportunity, he said, also an honor. I was on the spot at the right time. Fortune favors the brave. I'll miss the newspaper, I'm just skipping down a little bit. But you'll like the tube, he said, and the tube will like you back. She didn't answer. This gentle man had hoped to teach Latin, but had dutifully taken over the family publishing business. She knew that the wry face he was making, apparently because he could not suppress his distaste, was in fact a sign of vigorous self-control. He wanted to pull his hair out, or hers, or spank her maybe. So she sees it, right? She sees what, you know, that he's doing his best though, right? He wants to give her the choice, which he does, but she also knows what's going on in his mind. Okay, Ruth, she bought a VCR for her set?
She bought a VCR for her set. She took the Quidnuc tape home the night of her debut as an anchor. She slid it into the machine. In the unlit apartment, her brilliant garments merged with the darkness. She sat on a hassock, elbows on knees, chin on knuckles. She watched herself. Then, forgetting the remote, she reached forward and rewound, staring at the spinning green numbers as if she could keep track of them. She watched herself again, then again. Content didn't matter. She studied her face.
Okay. Okay, so what's Edith Perlman telling us here?
She's changing.
Yeah.
Well, she's right. Also observing herself. She's right. Doing what she used to do with the rest of the world, and she's training that on herself.
Right, right, which is, you know, TV and, you know, performance and so on. It's about, you know, to a certain extent, it is about me. However,
Content doesn't matter.
Still didn't matter. No, no, yeah. It's the face,
yeah.
Right?
It was also, she's changing.
Yeah,
not she's for the better.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And even about there, what we didn't read, well, she had even gone to a pink suede shoe. Mm-hmm. So she's really getting very colorful.
Yes, 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 mm-hmm. Yes. So she's staring at herself, and you know, I think one of the things that Edith Perlman is saying is that when we look at a picture that has ourselves so prominent, we're the eyesore. You know, when we can't see all we can see is our own face.
But it's also interesting that her co-anchor, the man, was described not so nicely. He sloped back and he pitted face. I mean, they didn't so much care what he looked like.
Right.
Kind of felt
Judy was saying that they didn't care what he looked like, but her, and that's right. the it's truth TV. Of TV, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kind of equaled it to Facebook while I was reading it. Like you see on Facebook the outside, but do you really see what's inside people? And
right.
I've got this, and this is wonderful, la la la. But do you really see their insides?
Right.
And so
right.
I kept thinking, you know, kind of equating it to
right.
the same.
Right. She's studying the face
the
of
face,
things, where she used
picture,
to go into things. Now
posing,
it's the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Entertainment yeah. tonight.
Right. the mirror in the bathroom didn't begin to catch its oddities. Just skipping down a couple of sentences. Mirrors threw back only two things. The greedy stare of one eye as a line was drawn across the lid. The preen of a finished full face. That's what you get when you look in a mirror. You know, you look out a window, you see a lot. But when you look in the mirror, you see greed and preen. Or that's at least what she's seeing. Was that spittle in the corner of her mouth? She leaned forward like an anxious mother, one hand floating in front of the screen as if it could wipe away the dot of silver. The dot disappeared by itself. Judy, do you want to read the next paragraph?
Sure. She got used to her, that one?
Yeah.
She got used to her features. In a few weeks, she was working on expression, still sitting on the hassock in the dark, head in hands, still treating the person on the screen as something to be studied. A thoughtful sympathy quivered on its face when it reported unhappy news. There was a friendly frown of exasperation when it gave some example of human silliness. But the chin lifted a bit too readily when a guest started to preach. Better to appear chastised. Let the audience get mad on your behalf. And don't laugh at your own jokes, she directed the woman in the frame. She was its mentor now as well as its chronicler. You with the bump on the nose and the cantilevered lower lip. You're not attractive, you know. You only look attractive. She laughed at that unvoiced quip, or half laughed. Her left fist was embedded in her left cheek, and only the right side of her mouth was able to smile. She wondered whether asymmetry would be captivating.
Yeah. Okay. So what's happened to her in this paragraph?
She's fixated on the face rather than on the content.
Right. So she's fixated on the face. She has become an it. Mm-hmm. Right. It's. You know, the mentor is saying its face, you know, and that's you know, the Buber, you know, the Martin Buber thing where our transactional relationships with people, he calls I-it relationships, our relationship with God and our loving relationships with other people, that's I-thou, I see you, it's about I-you, but when the I-it is, you know, when we, I'm saying hello to the cashier, not, you know, not to really say hello, but because, you know, we're transacting. And they're not bad, but it's not seeing the human being. We're not seeing the human being. So she's become an it. And she's its mentor. So she's both at the same time. Elon, do you want to read the next one? After a few weeks?
After a few weeks, she stopped being critical. Now, when she played herself at night, she watched with admiration. As her glossed eye-lined lids rose and fell, her frosted mouth grinned in the new crooked way. She was not so much at ease as accustomed, and cleverness had leaped into her mouth like a gremlin. She had put aside the metaphor she was accustomed to use and had taken up instead the bon mot, a man to be fecund with. She sighed after a report on a young millionaire. She snoops to conquer. That was how she summed up a luminary of network news.
Okay, so she's the bon, the beautiful word, right? A man to be fecund with. You know, okay, so an affectation.
Mm-hmm.
And then she snoops to conquer. You know, that's just nasty, right? You know, or snarky or whatever we would call it. So, you know, very, very different from before. Your remarks have become pointed, said her old boss at their weekly lunch. Like pencils, darts.
Yeah.
I do miss you, she said softly. So even though she's going through this, you know, she hasn't been, you know, I miss you. I miss your way of looking at the world. But his place in her world had been taken, not by the affected Ramsay McGraw, but by the two steady cameras, each with its glass lens and red light, scrupulously in attendance. Yeah, as if they're they're in attendance as if they're human beings, or as if they have a life of their own, these cameras. And the other thing about it is she has now given ultimate importance to the camera, right? How the camera, how, I mean, you know, sort of when we give ultimate importance to something that doesn't deserve the ultimate importance, that's a form of idolatry, right? It's like a, you know, in this case, it doesn't kill anybody, it just...
Is she selling herself out?
Yeah.
It's like she's...
Totally, yeah. The middle of the next paragraph, we must expect that what we believe to be right will soon be proved wrong, she said, uncharacteristically solemn, but quoting but not citing Max Weber, imagining the man from Moscow watching her in his solitary room. So she used to imagine what it's like for a family to experience mental illness. Now she's imagining what it's like for Max Weber, whose quote she's stealing, no attribution there, you know, how he's looking at her face. That's the way she's seeing the world now. It was a sweet moment, she thought, playing the tape an hour later. Now she, remember, sweet is a theme. Now she was the Russian. She tilted a pen between her fingers, took an occasional puff, and watched the credits unscroll over a long shot of two anchors soundlessly chatting. What is soundlessly chatting?
You're not saying anything.
Talking heads, right? Yeah. Right. It was perhaps too sweet a moment, and now we get back to the candy works. She was never to achieve that repletion again. She began to feel gorged instead. Some days she shuddered with nausea, as if a substance was poisoning her and she couldn't stop ingesting it. We can't bear the stuff, the Cambodian women at the candy factory had told her. We snack on celery and rice cakes. So they didn't eat what the candy works produced. You know, we can't stand this stuff. But she was eating what the candy works were producing. And so she's feeling it. And what does the word repletion mean?
Filled.
Yeah, filled, or it can mean overfilled, you know, or it can be, but filled. Yeah, so at that moment that she was full was great, but then, you know, then it became the excess, and she felt it in her body. She's beginning to feel gorged. What disgusted Franny was the endless self-care. She resented counting the grams of fat. Who's counting the grams of fat, right? She hated working out. She begrudged the time spent shopping for clothes. Mostly she felt tyrannized by the need to make up. Just skipping a sentence. She didn't tell him that she now recoiled from the unpainted egg. Not an egg at all, really. A beige lump, expressionless, unless you counted the morning pout. That's what it's become, right? You know, the face, the human face has been reduced to a beige lump. Top of the next page. Restraint had been his only tone of voice for so many years. Now he found he could summon no other. So, you know, we all have we're talking about her boss. You know, he's like crying inside, but you know, I guess he's committed to, we do need to make our own mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, he can't save her from herself. He tried repetition. Mm-hmm. Don't touch the nose. Don't get tattooed. And what does she do? she leaves the nose alone. She hadn't really been considered rhinoplasty, but then she goes. Franny's hands grasped her own elbows in an enchanted embrace. This is while she's getting tattooed, right? She grasped her own, she's hugging herself, you know? She's bottom of the page. A week later, Franny got an infection of the eyelashes. Palpebritis, she informed. Anybody had heard about that before? You had? Okay.
I live with an ophthalmologist.
Okay. Try it out, right? She informed the camera, the audience, the Russian, herself grinning crookedly, her right eye gorgeous behind its contact lens, her left one squinting under the outraged lid. So there's the real self coming through, and there's the made-up self, you know, the two eyes. She stopped the tape. Pause, said the letters. The numbers were still. The infected lid looked warm. It was warm. a crock pot for bacteria. The asymmetrical mouth looked wretched. The moosed hair surrounding the besieged face could have passed for barbed wire. So again, you know, she's thinking that she is her features, right? Instead of herself. Play. The homuncula. Homuncula? Yeah. You all know that?
Yeah.
You knew that. I didn't know that before I looked it up. That famincula. Yeah, like a humanoid type.
They used to think, before they understood reproduction, that what was in a woman's body was a teeny little person, just got bigger and then got born. And the representations, the drawings of that, you see this little person from the very beginning,
yeah.
A homuncula.
Right. Yeah. Oh, who cared? Continued with the news. Things happened fast this time, too. Franny's right sclera developed sympathetic conjunctivitis. What's the sclera?
That's the white of the eye.
The white of the eye. Sympathetic conjunctivitis. Sympathetic conjunctivitis, right? So one eye has sympathy for the other. Now she looked as if a rival had been scratching her eyes out, which actually they had. Okay. There were drops for the pain. There were drops for the pain and drops for the inflammation and drops to correct the blurring, right? You know, let's fix the fix and fix the fix and fix the next fix. Your eyes will heal, said the ophthalmologist. But my dear, tattooing. Really, I wish you had consulted me first. Of course you can't wear your lenses.
That's where it all started.
Right. Mm-hmm. So eyeglasses quenched Franny's new face. She tried the standard frame she'd worn when she worked for the newspaper. Perhaps she looked no plainer now than earlier. Right, exactly, mm-hmm. Right. But she had become accustomed to distinctiveness. She tried grannies and goggles and harlequins. Nothing helped. She couldn't manage the lopsided smile. She became too uneasy to run her hand through her hair. The nervous wit pried itself loose from her tongue and ran off. The gremlin. Yeah, isn't that great? She felt her charm draining away like life. And everybody at Quidnunc was so noticeably kind to her face and so patently engaged in sabotage behind her back. So this is, you know, we had... Who was it who described academia in this way? Nathan Englander or who
Many
else?
Many people, actually.
Many. Right. This is so kind to your face and stabbing you behind your back. So TV, you know, this is life in the screen. Right. So when Ramsey told her that her contract wouldn't be renewed, that her predecessor, driven crazy by the kids, wanted the old job back, Franny shrugged inside a brown sweater. I was not cut out to be an anchor, she said at last. No, what were you cut out for then, shuffling some papers? Again, he doesn't look at her, right? They don't see each other. An anchorite, but she wouldn't waste the pun on him. What's an anchorite?
A hermit.
A hermit, right?
Recluse.
Right, a recluse, yeah. She is good at freelance editing, but the pay is skimpy. Her eyes have recovered. She walks up Godolphin Hill most nights. You know, her eyes have recovered. Her outer eyes, her inner eyes. She thinks about the bag lady a lot, right? When she was only studying her face, now she thinks about the bag lady. She told her boss at their most recent lunch, maybe I should study social work, she mused, or become a cop. He didn't reply. Suddenly animated, she said, I'll take up stemming. Uh-huh. I'll wear shades and a cardboard sign, seduced and abandoned. And for a forgetful moment, she lifted one corner of her mouth. tell me about the ending here.
We just come back to herself.
I was going to say a new and improved self.
Yeah, she's learned. I mean, she's
aware.
Yeah, you know, she grew here. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a little pain and it took a little bit of suffering, but she grew.
She'd consider herself a victim in a sense, seduced and then abandoned, maybe by superficialities and
by
than
herself.
When she got there.
And the seduction is the, right? And that's the connection to the eyes, right? So in the third paragraph of the Shema, we say, you will not go astray, right? V'lo taturu acharei levavchem, don't go after your heart, v'acharei einichem, after your eyes, right? You're not going to go astray after your eyes, because our eyes can lead us astray. You know, we're seduced, you know, when Eve takes the apple, right? It's sort of a seduction, but I mean, she makes a choice, but she sees that apple, you know, she sees, her eyes see that apple, or that fruit. So seduction is very much there. When she's in the throes of it, back on that 44 at the top, she stopped the tape, paused, said the letters, the numbers were still, the infected lid looked warm, it was warm, the moosed hair. Like the line between, you know, reality and playback, you know, what is reality, what's real, and what's, you know, something that you can play back on the recorder. So
it goes back and forth. When she's plain, she thinks she looks fine, but later the same plainness doesn't. When she's beautiful, she thinks she looks beautiful, but later it's not pretty anymore. She notices every line. It's funny how you can see the exact same thing, whether in both places. And even though it's the exact same thing, your insights translate it differently.
Right.
It's like the chocolate. It's the same candy. Deal with
mm-hmm.
The chocolate.
Candy. Mm-hmm.
It's a great setup to the story. It really is. It's just a great setup.
Yeah. When I was first reading the story, I'm thinking, what is this doing here? Yeah. You know, Candy Works, and then, you know, then you get it. So the eyesore is what?
Well, it's more than one thing.
Yes.
So it's the outer versus the inner, as it physically in the candy place and the studio, and even the newsroom, what it produces versus what it is or what it looks like. And it's her as some idealized stock figure, and her as a real person. Mm-hmm. And then there's the color stuff, the bright colors, and the, I mean, it's really a neat story.
Right. Yeah. So, Edith Perlman is saying, what are sore eyes? Sore eyes are eyes that can only see the self. You know, that's what sore eyes are. You know, there might be bacteria, and there might be all of that, but really it's about, you know, eyes that don't see. Right,
a lack of vision.
Yeah. Right, a lack of vision, and again, you know, since it's Sukkot, and you know, we're saying Hallel every day, you know, we have a part of Hallel that says, you know, it's talking about idols, right? Enayim lahem velo yiru, right? They have eyes, but they don't see. You know, they have ears, but they don't hear. That's what idolatry is, and that's what. What's happening here. So, other thoughts. I had many, many copies of something I was gonna read you, which is sitting on my desk. I'll bring them next week. Just a couple of comments about eyesore, but also Edith Perlman on her writing process. So we'll do that next week.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for going back to
school. Oh, yeah. You didn't like that? You didn't like the Fabulous Small Jews?
Yeah, that was good, but you know, the other one we...
Oh, Cynthia Ozick?
No, but what did we read?
What was the other one?
Last spring was fabulous.